This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
The Gilgo Beach Killer. That's who we are talking about today. And the ecosystem around him, because it goes far deeper than just Rex Heuermann himself. The psychology of Asa Elrup is what we're going to be starting with. That's the ex-wife of Rex Heuermann. Asa sat across from the man she'd been married to for nearly three decades and asked him, "How many women did you do this to?" He said, "8. No hesitation. He's been charged with 7, but he said 8. She walked out of that room and still said she believes that he loved her. The new Peacock documentary, well, part 4 is new. The other 3 parts have been there for quite some time. Laid bare something most people can't wrap their heads around. A woman whose entire adult life was built around a man who was killing women in their basement. What makes someone hold on even after the truth comes out of his own mouth? That's a question that I think a lot of us are asking. Part 4 of the Gilgo Beach Killer House of Secrets is now available on Peacock. This is part 4 to the 50 Cent G-Unit one that was done about, I think it was 2 years ago now. And we did a deep dive on that at the time when it came out. And it was fascinating then. It's even more fascinating now as part 4 dives deep into Asa Elrup, the ex-wife, now believing, now getting the confession straight up from Rex, and still staying tight to her man, which is an interesting observation on all this. Joining us to break all this down, joining myself, of course, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, as always. And it's Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, who is with us on Wednesdays, who's author of this book, Nightbird, who just got some great awards for it in Las Vegas.
Well-earned, well-deserved, so, and the perfect person for today.
Yes, available wherever you get books. Go and check that out. My goodness, we got a lot to get into here today on this. Let's start, Siobhan, with some of focusing on Asa in this. Asa was adopted into an American family. She says she never felt wanted as a child, was assaulted at 16, and then attempted to take her own life before she ever met Rex. And then Rex, this man, shows up and as a knight in shining armor, I believe is one of the ways that she described him, taking care of everything. How much of what people call not knowing is really a woman whose survival instincts told her not to look too close at the one person who made her feel safe?
Yeah, you know, truth can be very scary for some people, and not everyone is made for honesty. I had a sense of her that the bit of glimpses into her life trauma that she gave us, that there's more. And who knows what other psychological factors, you know, you'd have to really get to know her in depth to get a good sense of everything that she'd gone through in life. But she was a broken person when she met him, and he swooped in as a rescuer, and he had an extreme amount of control over her, her perception of reality. And this is, I think, a big piece that has been the struggle for her is, who is she without Rex, and what is reality?
Yeah, which brings me to this question, Siobhan. You know, I was happy to see that she's working with a therapist that I had no idea she was that close, like hand in hand. And also the fact that they gave her permission to share so much openly on camera, which was beneficial to us. I hope it was beneficial to Asa on this. But I'm curious about her goal and what your goal would be with Asa and where you think she might be able to go, because she seems so doggedly locked in. Mm-hmm. It seems like the way she sees Rex, she not only doesn't want to, I think she's incapable at this point of seeing him other than the knight in shining armor. Do you think that as a therapist, she's going to try to move her through that to accept what the truth is of what he is, or is she just going to try to help her cope with what she wants to accept?
My sense is that, you know, and of course we didn't get any you know, verbatim what the therapy sessions are like or anything like that. My sense is that it was a good therapist. She was trying to work with all the components of the family and gradually help Asa see reality. But that's going to be slow work because for her to really come to a place of fully acknowledging the horror movie that she has been living in could just shatter her identity altogether and throw her into a state of being a non-functional person. And I think the therapist will keep working with her. It's going to be long-term work and something that will probably go on for the rest of her life. And who knows how much flexibility she has.
Yeah, but even if she wants to.
Exactly. I was really glad that she did have a therapist that she was
And totally vested in her. I mean, I was really pleasantly happy and surprised for the family that they did have someone that was that seemingly that close, like almost like living with them for most of this, even from, you know, going to the hearings and everything like that. So, and it also can't come cheap, obviously. But no, I'm glad for that aspect of it because, man, she was a lot more messed up than I thought she was.
I agree. We knew she would have some fragilities, but I was kind of surprised at how fragile she really is.
Yeah.
Is Asa more in touch with reality than the rest of us are on this? I mean, this is someone, I mean, she, I mean, I'm really kind of amazed how vocal she has been about this and how she is, you know, displaying her choices and her seemingly desire to want to get to know the other Rex. Mm-hmm. We're not in her situation. Very few people in this world ever will be or are, thank God. Yeah. But if you were to be in that sort of situation, can you fault her that she wants to try and understand more about the person that she spent her entire adult life with and had children with? I mean, granted, he's a monster. He's a horrible person. And I think the two can coexist. I think she can recognize that this is a horrible, monstrous human being over here who's done some really bad things. But she can also recognize that he was not that to her. Wow. And so many of us just want to look at her and go, tell him to go to hell. Ignore him. Don't feed the machine. Don't feed his madness. I mean, I totally get that. Mm-hmm. But that's not our choice to make. This is her life. It's not for me to say, well, you have no right to try and square this up more in your mind with the man that you spent all this time with and apparently had no idea this was going on. Mm-hmm. Actually, it kind of is her right to do that. And maybe... maybe that is the right path to go down. I don't know. I mean, Siobhan, is there a world where it is not a horrible path? I mean, for healing for her, not for the dynamics and the optics of all of us out here judging, but for her own healing to take that ride, to take that road and go meet with Rex to whatever boundary she wants to set up, but to learn who that man is. And I don't know what the end goal is, if it's to be continuing that relationship once she's gotten whatever she thinks she's going to get out of him in terms of information, or if it's just to go down that road, pick up that book and close it when she feels that it's complete. I don't know that she would know when to close that book to feel when it's complete. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you put that really well. We've all got a path. I mean, life is going to traumatize everybody in some way. Hopefully not this way. Mm-hmm. But we've all got to figure out what's our path through it. What are we going to do to survive? And if I were working with her, I would want to honor the process that she's on. But I have to admit, on a gut level, it's very unsettling.
It is.
Listening to their warm phone calls where, you know, he has this this weird thing of, hello, dear. And it just, you know, it kind of makes your skin crawl. And I have seen many, many women who have been married to someone far less cruel and aberrant, and maybe they commit a crime of some kind, and the wives are done. They're just done. You know, this is not who I thought he was, and I'm never talking to him again. I'm divorcing him. And it's, I always feel better, you know, when people go that direction. But these are people who are probably have a stronger personality, who can go on and build life apart from that person. And I personally feel better when I see that happen. You know, they change their name, they maybe move across the country, and they say, I am erasing that, you know. But yeah, she does seem to still be in this early phase of trying to make sense of it, trying to put the truth together. But the thing that really, the piece that I don't think she has fully integrated yet, if at all, is that he was a sadist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sadist, and just about the worst kind of sadist that we can imagine. And the way he tortured his victims, I mean, I cannot wrap my head around having any kind of a bond with a sadist.
Yeah.
And so I think that the ultimate goal for her would be able to fully recognize that and slide out of the denial and be able to separate herself from him. I mean, I think that would be a really good thing.
Yeah, that was probably, you know, to keep building on that, the most shocking thing I heard throughout that entire episode was when she said, I want to get to know that man. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good God.
Right.
But it also sparked another question in my mind with it that I'm curious about, Siobhan, and that is, he's kind of insinuated and presented a bifurcation of who he is. And she's accepted it and also built mm-hmm. it in. That's why she said she mm-hmm. wants to get to know that man that she doesn't mm-hmm. know, because I know him as a loving family man. She kept using the word family man. Is it actually possible for a psychopath to have two sides, or are they just psychopaths that know how to play the game with who they're engaging? Because to me, I thought when you actually have high-level psychopathy, you're just putting on a show 24/7. Is that the way it actually is, or is that actually a chance that there is actually is two sides to him?
I agree with you completely. I think a good psychopath can play two roles. They can play the loving father. They may not play it very well, but they try. Some of them are better at it than others. But I the degree of obsession that we have seen with him, the way he kept those detailed notes and did his planning and planned everything when she was going to be out of town. I mean, the planning showed an obsessive person. This is a person who was thinking about it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And
loving every minute of it.
Loving every minute of it. This was his addiction. And
his playtime.
Yeah, yeah.
And think about the fact that he gave himself a marriage to someone with zero guardrails. The only guardrail he had, what made it part of his fun fantasy, was we can only play when I get them out of town. And then mm-hmm. I have 3 whole days. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the room in the basement that we've learned was the kill room, that makes it the horror story even worse than I think most of us could even have imagined. Because I always wondered, like, did that actually anything go on in the house? Well, it turns out it did.
All it, or at least and those parts of it.
Yeah.
Maybe
and
more.
I think the part that so many are holding on to in this documentary, and I'm sorry if I'm spoiling it for anyone, but Asa, and I don't believe she still is, I could be wrong, but for what's portrayed in the documentary, she's sleeping in the kill room. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to be sleeping in the kill room. Mm-hmm. Like the basement, if you watch the doc, the original one, there's 4 episodes. The first 3 were recorded about a year or two ago, and the basement was still in kind of disarray. Well, they've gotten that redone. It's they got a bunch of shiplap up, and it looks different, and it looks
look
like
how redid it.
It looks like Joanna Gaines came in and then they rehoarded it. So it's HGTV with more hoarders, and it looks different than it used to. But Asa just really explain why she decided to stop sleeping in the bedroom that she was sleeping in, but she made a new bedroom in Rex's old childhood bedroom, which was the kill room, and mm-hmm. she sleeps down there, mm-hmm. and she talks about feeling a kind of a connection there, and that it's, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but like, I don't know, therapeutic. What the hell? I guess that's what I'm getting to is what the hell? Because that's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. You're going and sleeping in the room that your husband killed all these women in, and you're filling it with Beanie Babies, and it looks like childhood, like children's toys. Mm-hmm. When
she
you
put
saw
dressings
that,
on Nutterville, man.
When you saw that horror show and that moment, what the hell was going through your mind, Siobhan?
I frankly was shocked. And that's one of the strangest things that I have ever seen. And again, I try not to go into it with a judgmental attitude because that's not my job. My job is, as you're saying,
to understand.
To understand and to say what's going on. And I had a few speculations. One was that, is this part of her trying to get over the denial? Mm-hmm. That because she said, I think about the victims when I'm down here at night. Mm-hmm. And so is that her way of trying to integrate, you know, the stories of the women that were killed? Maybe. But I don't think you'd be sleeping very well if that's what you were doing down there. So mm-hmm. Also, was it an attempt to reclaim power to say, you know, this is my home. He's not going to win here. Sometimes people do that. You know, if there's something bad that happens in their home, they say, well, I'm not leaving my home. But the other thing that may be the most likely in my mind was, is this a form of her trauma bonding? That this was his childhood bedroom, clearly part of his ritual world. And is there, and perhaps this is not conscious on her part at all, a way to try to stay close to him, to the him that she thinks is the good him? Mm. But yeah, all the stuffed animals and child things, I'd love to sit with her and have a more in-depth talk about what all is this about and how did you come to a decision to do that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Siobhan.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say that's the weirdest thing about all this.
Yeah. And when I'm curious about this aspect of it, too, when she said to be closer to the victims, I wasn't quite getting the closeness that she felt because I didn't quite feel or see the emotional connection there of what happened to those victims. So I'm curious from your point of view, what do you think she actually thinks and feels about those victims, knowing that her husband did those things to those victims? Is she able to fully embrace that, or is she just saying that? Again, I'm not negating her where she's at on her path on this. I'm just kind of curious where on that path she's actually at.
Right. Because, you know, I can understand completely the need to put the puzzle pieces together. I think that would be part of healing for her, wanting to learn who the victims were. But I would want to learn who were they when they were alive, you know, not sit in the room where they were tortured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times we honor victims of crimes. What do? We may tear down the murder house. That's what they did. You know, Jeffrey Dahmer's place was torn down.
Yeah.
And put a park in and do something to dedicate it to the victims and honor the victims. And you can go there and meditate if you want. Something that focuses on their lives, not on the room where they were tortured.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
And the thing is, it's not her cross to bear. She didn't do these things. Mm-hmm. So as long as she didn't do these things, she wasn't involved in these things, it's not hers to bear. I mean, indirectly, you know, is it certainly a part of her life? Yeah, but it's not what she didn't do these right. sort of things.
Right.
I found it interesting something that she said in that last like 5 minute segment where they leave you going, oh God, this is a horror movie, even more than you thought it was going to be, where she said there will be no closure for anyone. Mm-hmm. I found that interesting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just kind of a figurative speech, because I hate the word closure too. Where it's like, oh, now you have some closure, like nobody ever gets closure. And I get it. Like, there really isn't. In the big picture, these people are dead. There's no fixing this. I don't know. I didn't know if I'm gleaning too much off of that statement or not, or if it was just her rattling off a bunch of stuff, and then they caught it on camera, and she's, there's no closure for anyone, because there clearly hasn't really been for her, and there probably never will be. What do you think she means by that when she says there'll be no closure for anyone?
Yeah, there were certain times in the documentary where I felt like she was sort of reciting lines and reciting lines that she's been told. And as you and I have said so many times, closure is really a myth. You know, we can grow through things, but we always carry them with us. It's never like it didn't happen. So is it another way of her brain trying to protect herself that she really can't get any further along than she is? I'm not sure.
It's interesting. I mean, she's got a lifetime of reps in fantasy. I mean, she really does. I mean, she fantasized about him from day one, and he selected her because of her ability to fantasize this idyllic world that allowed him to do what he wanted to do. And so her reps that she has to overcome to let go of any fantasy and see reality for what it is a lot. I'm curious, Siobhan, so out of everything that you saw in that, from your position, from your expertise, what was the most shocking thing that you saw about Asa during that special?
The most shocking thing was the sleeping in the room. Because to me, that would be a disconnect from the torture that went on there. And when she thinks about these women, is her mind going back to that? Which I think at some degree, you have to let your mind go there, because you have to accept, in order to move forward, you have to accept that this is a sadist. But that was shocking, that she would choose to put herself through that on a nightly basis, because we want to see people become more grounded in a realistic perception of the world, but we want to see them start to rebuild their own lives. Who are they? And what kinds of things can she do to develop herself that are not centered around this misperception of the past? Because he really did control her perception of reality. And it would be lovely, I hope, in the future, you know, this has not still been really that long. 33 months is, you know, relatively recent.
Tip of this iceberg, right?
Yeah. And so I hope in the future that she can move beyond the need to sleep there, the need to have phone calls with him, not needing to accept that, because her affect still changes when he's on the phone. Hello, dear.
Yeah.
And you see that attachment that she still has. And it would be wonderful to see her say, I do not need to be attached to a sadist, and develop her own life.
Well, one follow up to that, Siobhan, I'll put you on a spot as a therapist on this one, as we always do anyway. If you were her therapist and you heard her now tell you, yeah, I'm sleeping down in the bedroom after I remodeled it, what would be your first question to her? What would be the first thing you'd say? I'm just curious. If I can put you on the spot.
Oh, you can always put me on the spot. I don't know that I'll be cogent in it. because it would probably be something that would flow out of the conversation of, how are you managing? What is soothing to you? What are you perceiving now? But I tend to, when people are open to my advice, I tend to lean toward cutting ties with toxic people.
Right.
And understanding what a trauma bond is. And let's move out of the trauma bond, not do things that are going to reinforce the trauma bond. So I would be, you know, I can't say grabbing her and shaking her by the shoulders, but that might have been my inclination, but trying to redirect in a way away from that.
Oh, you're so good. Thank you.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue the conversation. And we're going to get into Victoria, the daughter, and also Rex as we continue this conversation. So press subscribe so you don't miss any of that. Substack, YouTube is where you can make your comments.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.